Welcome to Strength for the Journey. Thanks for joining us again. Strength for the Journey is a radio program designed to strengthen the believer for the days that lie ahead. We have a website at strength4thejourney.com, and this is radio program number 82 if you're listening by shortwave radio. We have our last-ditch effort to try to raise as much money as we can for the last order of tracks. We're going to try to get 250,000 tracks here by the end of the month. We're all short, maybe about $8,000. We got, I think, $12,000 raised, and so we're almost to our new goal. We decided to go ahead and set our sights a little higher. We found out that Zondervan and another Christian publishing company are being sued for $70 million from groups that feel like there's offensive literature, or it's offensive literature that's being put in the Bible, and they want it taken out. So I imagine the chick tracks that are very strong with their message will probably be on the chopping blocks down the road. So we want to get as much into the hands and out of the country as possible at this point in time. Speaking of getting out of the country, I have a special guest in the studio with me. Her name is Maria, and she grew up in a communist country in Bulgaria. And she was sharing with me over lunch today an amazing story of her escape from communism when she was 10 years old. So I want to introduce you to Maria. Thanks, Maria, for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, I want to give as much opportunity during this program that you can just share your story and your experience of communism and the similarities that you're seeing happen all over again. And it's interesting that we're having more and more people calling from Eastern European countries that are having the same story that you're going to share, that they escaped one time and now it looks like they're going to have to escape again. And so I just want you to kind of just open up and just share a little bit of your background, what it was like growing up in a communist country and how the Lord literally delivered you.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. It's difficult, I think, for Americans to picture a country where, particularly in America, where our rights can be taken away and our freedoms can be infringed upon, because all we've known here is freedom. And, you know, when I share with people my story, I think it makes it tangible and I think it makes it real, that there's a very real possibility that can happen in America as well. It's a long story. I'm not sure how far back to start, but I guess part of the story is we've always been lovers of America. My family, I grew up in Bulgaria until I was 10 years old, and my father had lived here in the 70s, and the government basically had forced him to return, him and his mom and dad to return, and they arrested him at the airport as he arrived, and they labeled him an American spy.
But it's interesting what you shared at lunch, that they baited him back in under the pretense that if he didn't come back, that they would kill you, his children.
His brother. Yeah, who was left as a collateral, so to speak.
But if he came back, everything would be fine.
Just come back and there will be no problems. And, of course, that's not how it happened. The moment that they arrived at the airport, they were arrested. And that's where trouble started for him. And it continued on to his marriage to my mom.
What year was that happened?
I'm not entirely certain. I want to say it's 75-ish.
Like mid-70s.
Mid-70s,
yes. So we are enjoying the comforted American lifestyle, yet you were living, or your family was living under a communistic rule while we had the greatest freedoms in the world.
Oh, absolutely. I think that, America had no idea the atrocities that were taking place under communism. Really, really evil things.
And that's why you aspired to come to America, because you could see freedoms that you never had experienced all your life.
Absolutely. America represented freedom to us, and we were hungry for it, really, because we were under bondage.
So once your father got back to Bulgaria and he was arrested and he was put, I guess, what was the life like at that point in time?
Very restrictive. So back in the day, their identification was a Bulgarian passport. So it's a passport that everybody over age of 16 has to carry. And, you can be checked randomly. And what they did is they put a black stamp in his passport, which, singled him out. He was prevented from living in certain places. He couldn't live in the capital city. I mean, the government toys with you. They tell you what to do, what you can't do, and they target you. He was frequently arrested, questioned. How do you know this? I mean, he's a guy, you know, he was here in his 20s in America. What does he know? He was here to have fun. And, you know, relentlessly he was questioned, beaten. You know, my mom had, you know, would have to follow sometimes after the car whenever they take him because you don't know if you'd see him. I mean, there's millions of people that disappeared that way. And it wasn't until after the fall of communism that these graves uncovered millions of, they were hidden graves, millions of bodies.
And these were people that just suddenly disappeared. One night they were at their home and next night they were not there. Nobody knew where they went.
Or it could be
went.
An accident. A lot of those things happen, you know. But yeah, really, really, I mean, there was hidden camps that they discovered. Bulgaria is not a big country. It's only about, give or take, it's 8 million people. Smaller than the state of Ohio. Oh, so to think that that many people
could disappear
is mind-blowing.
So this is as you're growing up, how old were you at this time?
I was 10 when we left.
Okay.
So I'd grown up in Bulgaria all the way through that.
So what year was it then, if we go fast forward from that time of your escape, so to speak, you literally escaped in the trunk of a car.
Yes. Yes, that was traumatic, I would say. But it really, for as traumatic as it was, it's interesting how God gives us grace for the moment. You look back and you think, how in the world did I have the sanity or the strength, or my parents? Imagine being parents of a 10-year-old child and dragging your child through this. You're responsible for their lives. I can't fathom what they went through mentally and emotionally, and the amount of faith it took. And I have to tell you, we had become believers, born-again believers, probably about a year before that. And this was kind of a honeymoon journey with God, I would say, really. We were on our knees nonstop because all we had was Him, and without Him, we were dead. So it was a series of miraculous events. We could spend hours here talking about. And it's funny, no matter how many times you give the story, it's interesting talking to me and my parents because everybody remembers their own piece of the puzzle, so to speak. Yeah. And you start going into these details and you just see the hand of God in every step. And that's what it means to live by faith, really, is when you realize your back's up against the wall and all you have is Jesus. And He always comes through.
Well, that's why I describe a lot of this experience that we've had just coming here, of leaving everything. And this is literally, when you left Bulgaria, you had nothing. You left with only your life and the clothes on your back.
Yeah.
And, you know, in that place of desperation, I say that, you know, I cried out to God, God, if you don't feed me, I'm going to die. I don't know anybody here. I don't know language. I'm just vulnerable. And I heard Him say, good, now you're where I want you.
Yeah.
And I see that there's a place. When we get to a place of desperation, God shows up. You know, when you got Pharaoh's army on your backside and the wall, you know, and the sea in front of you, and you say, God, if you don't save me, if you don't deliver me, I'm going to die. Okay, good. Now you know that it's my hand that's delivering you. Nobody else will get the glory but me because you know there's no way out.
It's true. And there's such comfort because you know that it's not natural circumstances that are getting you there. And it's how God, I'm even to this day discovering it. It's really how God likes to do it. We leave the situation until it looks like it's only they can get you out of it. But how comforting it is after that to know that, you know, God's with me. Because that's the only way this is going to work out.
Well, you shared at lunch that this family that took you in and ended up getting you out of the country was just a miraculous series of events.
Oh, yeah.
That how God just put you in a place where somebody took care of you, took you in. Share a little bit about that, because I think it's important, because we don't know what's going to happen in the future in each one of our lives. And we're going to have to, many of us are going to have to depend upon the miraculous hand of God for Him to deliver us because of what's coming. The comfort zones are leaving, and that means there's a dependency zone that's going to have to be entered into.
Yes.
And I know this is where you guys walked this thing out.
Yeah. So let me take the story back a little bit to connect it for you. So back to my father, because of him, he had met my mom, and they had this bond about America and freedom and what it represented. And so when they became married, she was also persecuted, arrested. I was hassled and harassed at school by teachers because of my parents. And you know, the government had basically said to us, you're never going to leave Bulgaria. You're going to die here. And my father would taunt them and say, I don't think so. I'm going to leave and I'm going to be free someday. And through a series of events, we were able to meet. We managed to get visas to several other communist countries. Our goal really was to get to Austria. That was the neutral country. And it was very tricky about how to get there. And so we had arranged a trip to Romania, Hungary, and Czechoslovakia. And we were only allowed in Hungary for 48 hours. And that's really where we wanted to be because that was our only access to Austria. And so when we left, and then there's a series of miracles that accompanied that, but I had an aunt who had already gone through the process. She was already in Austria, and she was working feverishly to try to figure something out, some way to help us escape. Once we left Bulgaria, we knew that we couldn't go back. We had such a target on us that if we were being watched, if we made one wrong move, we would be killed. So there was no playing around with this. So when we got to Hungary, we were hoping that within the 48 hours we could make something happen, and we couldn't. And we ultimately ended up staying there 40 days illegally.
But you didn't know the language either.
We did not know the language. We didn't really know anybody that could help us. And you couldn't really stay in a hotel. A, we didn't have the funds on us. And B, you have to give your passport as information and you're identifying yourself. So we really couldn't do that either. So for the first few days, there was an acquaintance that my father had. He had taken us in. And every day he'd come home looking at us like, really, you're still here? So we had to leave, but we had nowhere else to go. So my aunt had tried to be helpful, and she had tried to find a contact, a friend of a friend's cousin that might take us in Hungary. And so we got this information last minute. We knock on these people's door at 10 o'clock at night, and we woke them up. They looked at us like, who are you people in Hungarian? And we don't speak Hungarian. So through the charades system, they discovered that we're Bulgarian. And they said, well, you know, hold on. I think there's a Bulgarian a couple houses down that lives here. And what are the odds of that, really? There's not that many Bulgarians. Maybe now there are, but there weren't that many Bulgarians in Hungary. So the odds that there's a Bulgarian there that could help us out was incredible. So they called us, translated. We figured out these people had no idea who we were. Nobody ever gave them a heads up, and they couldn't take us in. But this Bulgarian woman said, you know what? I can take you in. Why don't you come stay with me? And that was a miracle. She allowed us to stay there as long as we needed. And it was a safe person in a time where you couldn't trust anybody, because at this point, we've exceeded our stay. Anybody is our enemy at this point. Anybody could turn us in, maybe even for a reward. Mm-hmm. So it was incredible how for 40 days, God kept us safe. And isn't that like the children of Israel for 40 years? I feel that the number is very significant, especially because on the 40th day is when someone came to rescue us, so to speak, mm-hmm. and to smuggle us out of the country in the trunk of a car. And that was an incredibly frightening experience. It was my mom and I at the first go, and then my father.
So it's just your mother and you on the first shift out.
Yes.
So you had two shifts going out, your mom and you, then your father.
Yes, yes. And, you know, it's terrifying when you're sitting in the trunk of a car, you're a 10-year-old child, and you hear footsteps walking up to the trunk. And this isn't like crossing the Canadian border where they just say citizenship, okay, you're good to go. They check the trunks. And in countries where it's so, rigorous, so to speak, nobody asks questions. They arrest you, they ship you back, they kill you. I mean, there's guards in these places for a reason. It's no joke. So you're really afraid for your life. This was really significant for us. And as you hear the footsteps approaching the trunk, and the voices, and you're bracing, basically, for the trunk to pop, and it didn't pop. And the footsteps walked away, and the car took off again, which, I mean, this stuff, movies are made out of this, it was our lives. And, we were dropped off in a foresty area, and the gentleman that smuggled us out didn't speak our language, we didn't speak his, so, I mean, talk about the extra challenge, God. I would say facilitated that entire conversation, but he told us to run and said there would be a river to cross, and my aunt would be waiting for us at the thruway. And if you have seen The Fugitive, the movie, the paranoia, it's really what it is, because we have no idea if we can trust this guy. What if he just designed this whole thing to trap us in a humiliating way? It's incredible. So my mom grabbed my hand. God bless her strength and bravery. Unbelievable. And we just started running, and you hear sticks breaking under your feet, and you're thinking we would stop and listen because we think we're being chased. And finally, we end up seeing a barbed wire fence, and your heart just sinks because the first thought that crosses your mind is you're trapped. And my mom just squeezed my hand and said, honey, don't worry. We'll climb through this if we need to. We're going to be free. So as we got closer, we saw there was a little opening at the bottom of the barbed wire fence, and we crawled through that, and then we had to cross a big river. I say river, people usually think of a brook. This thing was up to my neck deep, and it was flowing fast, and the rocks were all moss and slippery, and my mom's dragging me as my feet are waving in the waves. And I mean, you're fighting for your lives, but how ironic, and I don't want to miss this. Just like the children of Israel, 40 years, and they went through the water, and we had to go through water after 40 days to get to the promised land. It's just very symbolic. There's a cleansing, there's a washing, and God parted the seas, really, for us. Quite an amazing experience. And so after that, you know, there's a guard post there. I had kind of told you a little bit about this over lunch, and you know, usually the guard posts are covered on, you know, all three sides, only an opening in the front, and we were tiptoeing around it, trying to figure out how to zigzag if we were to run across the field if he started shooting, but there was no guard there. Another God story here. And we ran across that field to the thruway, and weren't sure if we were still in Austria or Hungary, just, you don't know, but we saw there was a bus stop, and we saw that it was written in German, and just minutes later, my aunt met us, and right there on the thruway, we just dropped on our knees and just praised God, and we're kissing the ground, and what a feeling to experience freedom after that whole long journey. It was unbelievable. And then my dad went, you know, through the same journey. He has his own fun details to describe his thoughts and fears during the process, but it really is like a fairy tale.
You know, it's what's really amazing is that after all that you've gone through, and then you experience freedom, and then you begin to see the signs that the freedoms that many have grown to take for granted, they don't appreciate because they've never lived under communism. Yes. And they don't know the signs of communism as it's approaching because they have never experienced it like you. And this is something that you have a perspective that most people don't have.
Absolutely.
What do you see just from your perspective? I know one thing you mentioned to me too is that, you know, you try to talk to anybody and share your experience, and it's just fingers in their ears and la, 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 la. You know, they just do not want to hear the warnings that you're trying to share with people from your own experience.
Oh, yeah. People think I'm crazy when I tell them that there's a lot of red flags. And you know, when you live a sheltered life where you've never really seen anything bad and you hear these stories happen, but they happen to other people, but not to us. They couldn't happen to us. And, you know, people are comfortable. They can't fathom an uncomfortable experience. And especially America being such a great nation, it's always represented freedom. You can't possibly imagine that is something that could happen. And so people are willingly giving up their freedoms very naively. That's the word I guess I would use, is people are naive. And it blows me away. I cannot tell you how many times I share my story with people and share my concerns to say, you know, you're giving up your rights, you're giving up your freedoms, and this country is headed to a very much a communist type dictatorship, and it will be too late. You cannot get your freedoms back. And little by little, we're giving them away. The sad thing is we're celebrating it. Every time we give away something, we just celebrate it. It's incredible. So people are not receptive. And Christians, you know, I'm heartbroken to say, I think maybe people are just intimidated at the thought of this because it sounds scary, and it is scary. It's scary. It's real. And people just say, no, whatever is going to happen is going to happen. God will protect me. But I don't think it's that simple. I think that there's so much that God expects of us, and he gives us a heads up. He warns us. He wants to protect us, and he wants us to know what's going to happen, or else it wouldn't be all over the Bible. So I don't think that God intended for us to stick our fingers in our ears and just la, la, la.
You know what? I've experienced leaving and finding that there's a purpose on the other side. And your purpose is to serve the Lord. You know, let my people go that they might serve me, is what Moses told Pharaoh. And the problem is nobody really wants to go to serve. They want to stay and play, and they want to stay and live out their lone life the way they want to live it. And, you know, there's a time when God is trying to give us the hint. You know, it's like the mother bird giving the nudge of the baby out the nest, you know, and they go, you know, and they say, no, I ain't jumping, you know. You know, pretty soon those down feathers would be so depleted and nothing but thorns in that nest that, yes, you'll finally say anything's better than this. Mm-hmm. But the thing that I keep thinking is that there's really people to help on the other side. And really what we're saying is we're too selfish with our own life to go serve somebody else. We'd rather stay and live for ourselves than leave and serve others. And really that's where life begins, is when you get out of that selfish mindset and you find out that you don't really love your neighbor as yourself. You know, you claim to be a Christian, but the Lord made it pretty clear when he told that lawyer, you know, and asked him, what must I do to inherit eternal life? And he said, well, you know the law, how do you read it? Love the Lord thy God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. Love your neighbor as yourself. And he said, you've answered correctly. Do this and you'll live. Mm-hmm. But you know, we don't even do this to live. We don't even live like we love our neighbor as ourself. You know, then he went on to explain the Good Samaritan story, you know, and how many people just walk by this guy. And I realize now that there are needs that we walk by every day and we don't even see, we don't even care, because we're too busy with our own life.
And very much so. American Christianity looks very different than Christianity elsewhere. You know, my mom likes to share this, and I'm echoing her heart here, but, you know, when we had first become saved in Bulgaria, you know, going to the prayer groups in our little church, and it was illegal to be a Christian in Bulgaria back then, so you're sneaking around. And going to these prayer groups, you felt the Spirit of God. It was palpable. You could cut it with a knife. And we thought, oh, how great someday to go to America, because everybody there must be praising God because they're free, you know. And you get here and you just see how it's taken for granted. And it's you know, churches have kind of become more like country clubs, and, you know, with memberships and not really about the heart of what it is. And I can't per se blame the church, but I just think our culture, when you become comfortable, you little by little, you drift off into your comforts and you start losing focus about the things of God and how to really live out your faith, you know. And we're all in danger of that, me included. So it's sobering. It's really sobering. And it's important really to oftentimes leave the country to see what Christianity looks like in other places when people are afraid or fighting for their lives or oppressed or persecuted, to really understand how they live and serve God in the midst of that pain.
You know, I used to travel all over the world with a ministry as a photographer, and I felt like when I left the States, I felt like I entered the real world. Mm-hmm. You know, and every time I go back, I go, I got to go back to the unreal world. Because, you know, like we just said, you feel the presence of God in a place where you appreciate the presence of God.
Yes.
You know, like it's all you have.
It's that desperation. We have everything in America. We're completely self-sufficient. So you're really rarely in a position where you need God.
It kind of reminds me of a church in Revelation. Started with an L.
Very true.
So we're trying to wake up. You know, one of the things I asked the Lord, I just when I came here, I saw the people worshiping and their tears. You know, you can see the tears on the floor of the church, you know, and I'm sitting there going, why are they so hungry here and they're not back in the States? Mm-hmm. And I said, and the Lord asked me a question. He said, have you ever been hungry when you're asleep? And I thought, no, I haven't. I thought, oh my goodness, that's a symptom of a slumbering spirit. You have no hunger.
Yes.
So this is what the problem of a comfort zone or a place of comfort is, that you go to sleep in your place of comfort. And God's now waking us up. He's showing us signs now that things are going to change. And if we'll wake up soon enough, we can do something about it. But the sad thing is, like what you're trying to tell a number of people back in your hometown, but nobody wants to listen. Everybody wants to stay asleep. In fact, they almost get mad at you for trying
Very
to nudge
much
them.
So. Oh, yes.
I said, look, you know, would you just don't bother me? I'm enjoying my sleep right now.
Yes, yes. And, you know, I just want to thank you for this opportunity again to speak and just to share this. And I'm so glad you're doing a radio broadcast about this. And my heart and my passion is my soul has become more and more alarmed and awakened to what's coming. And as you see, particularly the political signs that the average American is not recognizing, my heart's desire is for pastors, shepherds of the flock, to wake up and to really tell their congregation something bad is coming, prepare. Because I think that there's a false sense of, it'll be okay, everything's fine. You know, God will take care of us. God will take care. Not that God wouldn't be with us. God is with us for sure. But people, so many people will be caught up in the storm and overtaken by it because they're unaware.
What if Joseph had just said, well, God will take care of us. Don't worry about storing 7 years of food for the 7 years of lack. Oh, God will take care of us. I mean, it's just a presumptuous place that you go to instead of being awakened and saying, you know what? I called you to be a Joseph. I've called you to take care of people, because this is I see it as what is an incredible ministry opportunity for the Josephs of the world who will hear and obey and prepare, that God would use them in a great way to reach who knows how many.
Well, I have to tell you, what you are doing here in Panama is mind-blowing to me, because I think that there's very few places in the world or communities that are so outward thinking. Not only are you thinking for us four no more, but you're thinking about others, just like Joseph, who saw that the need, that the famine was coming. You're preparing for what's to happen to help others. It is incredible how selfless you are. Your ministry, all the people that serve here with you, have blessed my heart more than I can imagine. And I tell you, I encourage anybody to reach out to you for questions, help, because you will get completely selfless help here. Yeah. Thank you for really for it being so accepting and so helpful to me.
Well, you know, it's a place like when you have been given much, when you've been forgiven much, you love much. Mm-hmm. And I realized when the Lord brought me here, He said, just as you didn't create yourself, neither could you deliver yourself. You're delivered for my purpose, not your own. And He's just setting the guidelines of why I was here. And it's not about me, it's about somebody else. And I think that if we get to that point, lay our lives down, and you'll find out the whole world will open up for the purpose of God in our life. But until you get to that point, you'll just be in your own little world, and you'll never open up. We have about 30 seconds here, buddy. Just, do you have anything, just a final comment or anything on your heart?
I think it's important that people, wake up to what's happening, reach out for questions. Help is available. You're not alone. And it's wonderful, like I said, what you're doing to have a wake-up call for, particularly for the body of believers.
Well, thank you. Thank you,
thank
Maria.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, thank you for joining. Thanks again for joining us on Strength for the Journey. Again, our website is strength4thejourney.com, and we'll see you next time.